We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
I've noticed in the last, pretty much like since the pandemic, I think this got started, probably like 5 or so years before the pandemic, so maybe like 10 years, with some of the like headliners that like this is hardcore. There would be like, you know, reunions at large fests, you know, like big ticket bands come through that people remember from the past. And it seems like Seisha is kind of like broken into that realm where they're like up there with like Gorilla Biscuits and bands, you know, that like, you know, you get like people who are nostalgic for the past. So, you know, you'll be at a fest. And I saw you were recently in Chile. So like what is that like, I guess from your perspective, how surreal is that, that like this thing that you kind of did when you were younger is now something that people still remember and in some ways has like actually grown in popularity among the community?
Oh man, we were talking about this in the band today. Like, so when I was young and I was playing in a band called You and I, and there was no screamo label, you know, like people were just like, you're an emo band that has heavy parts, you know, or something, like they would just say something like that. And like Seisha would play with us and we would, you know, we were these bands doing this weird thing that was kind of like outside of the norm or whatever, but there was like a little niche of, you know, 30 kids that would come to see it, and it was fun, and we were trying to do our own thing. And both of those bands break up around, you know, not around the same time, but close. And then 20 years goes by, and it, like 20 years of like people like, you know, learning about that music. And so like, I would have never have guessed that Seisha would get back together and there'd be like that sort of response. And it, because like at the time it's like the glory of us going on tour together, and we're like, you and I and Seisha playing in like Omaha, Nebraska to 50 kids and being stoked that like three of those kids knew the words to the songs. Yeah. You know, like, and so like to like play a show to like 1200 people is like really, it's odd, like it, not odd in a bad way, but just kind of like, it's weird that like that kind of music has developed to that.
Yeah. You're playing to as many people in one show as you did on a whole tour.
Pretty much. Yeah. The other thing that that is odd, that like in like a good way, is like there's people our age bringing their kids to the show.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like they're bringing their kids to the show and both of them are fans of the band.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like the dad is bringing their like, you know, punk rock kid to a show and the dad is like, this is a bunch of noise. Yeah. And we're the band, you know, and so that's interesting too.
Yeah, I see that more and more now, where there's like people that are slightly older than me, they've got teenagers and they're both like full throttle into hardcore, you know.
That must be so cool.
Yeah.
That
and
must
like,
be so cool.
I kind of want that for my kids, but I don't want to like force my music onto them. Yeah. I also like, if I'm being entirely honest, I like needed the communal aspect of hardcore and punk for reasons that I hope are not ever relevant to them, you know?
That's a good point.
You know, so I had a need for it that I hope they don't have, but if they have an interest in it, I would love for that. And it kind of gets back to what, you know, our conversation started at about being the older guy in the room and it being normal now. I kind of lost my train of thought there. I was going somewhere profound with this, so you'll just have to substitute in whatever profundity you have.
Well, you know, thinking about what you are talking about, like some of those SESA shows were benefits for the local communities.
Yeah.
What drove that, and how did you choose those nonprofits to connect with, or those communities to give?
Like when it became, when they set up the initial shows, I wasn't in the band yet, and then they parted ways with their guitar player, like, I don't know, a month before the shows, and I got the call, and they were like, do you think you could learn the songs for these five shows? We're going to play these five shows, and that's it. And
Who's the person that we know that has been in a thousand bands that can learn something?
Figured out the songs and practice with them twice, and then we played five shows.
Wild.
But when I talked to them about it, it was sort of like, you know, the idea of like, you know, I think, I'm going to sound so old and kind of bitter, not bitter, but just weird about it. But so it's like hardcore now is not an umbrella anymore. There's people that'll be like, I'm into screamo. There's people that are like, I'm into post-hardcore. There's people, I'm into beatdown. I'm into like, and there's no longer an umbrella of hardcore.
There's no longer the old school and new school.
Yeah, yeah. It was just, so it's like when, you know, in the 90s when we were band, like when Seisha was a band and like when you and I was a band, like we were playing under this umbrella of hardcore. Now, yeah, we were different than like, I don't know, some other like moshy hardcore band, but we were all just like, we're a hardcore band. And for us, hardcore was DIY shows at art spaces or community spaces, $5 for the show or $4 with a can of food or like Food Not Bombs benefits or like, you know, and that's what those things were. And it was like, if you divorce that from hardcore, then it's just music. So certainly if you have the selling power to sell out places and you're not saying like, you know what, like we don't need all of this fucking money to like cover our costs for traveling or whatever, hey, remember when we used to do benefits for Food Not Bombs? Remember when like ABC No Rio, like in the importance behind that and importance behind having an activist community was part of hardcore? Like, so it's like for us, I think growing up in the 90s and stuff, like I never divorced that part from hardcore. And I think like maybe for a young kid getting into hardcore now, seeing the Jimmy Kimmel show and Knocked Loose, and there's no context for like what that community or what that activism is a part of hardcore. They're just seeing heavy music on a stage on a talk show. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's hardcore by aesthetic.
Yeah.
But what's not being presented is this grassroots activism part of it. And so like for us coming back and for Seisha to come back and like do shows and stuff, it was like, we're obviously going to make more money than we need to cover our costs. And so like, like what we always dreamed of back then when we would like do a Food Not Bomb show and raise $150 was like, wouldn't it be cool if we would have been able to raise like $5,000?
Yeah.
And like now we can do that.
Well, and that brings me back to the point I was going to make earlier, but forgot because I'm old now, which was like around the time I started going to hardcore shows was roughly lines up with when like the first Youth of Today reunion was.
Oh yeah.
And there was like a backlash against that. It was like, fuck these old guys, fuck, you know, like reliving the glory days. And I kind of bought into that.
Sure.
And I've come full circle, and now I'm like okay with these bands from yesteryear reuniting, especially if it's bands like, you know, Youth of Today or Earth Crisis or Undying or Prayer for Cleansing, that had a strong message. And I feel like it's a counterbalance to, you know, Knocked Loose on Jimmy Kimmel, where, you know, I know it grows from the same community that I love.
And not to say anything bad about the people.
Not at all.
And I'm sure that they're
At that divorced from the community that it grows from, it's not, you know, there's probably a lot of people that are into like Five Finger Death Punch. Yeah. That are going to see that and be like, yep, this is me. I like hurting people. I like feeling tough. Sign me up. You know, and there's an element to that in hardcore that I do buy into sometimes. But I want those bands that are giving speeches in between songs. I want those bands that are raising money or speaking to, you know, political causes that are outside of the mainstream, not necessarily being represented by the mainstream discourse. And so I kind of like now where we're at, where you do see some of these older bands, some of the bands that had the stronger message, putting it back out there again, especially when they've been like consistent. Like I know like Earth Crisis, they're still a vegan straight edge band. And I love that, you know, about them. You know, I don't know about like Youth of Today, Gorilla Biscuits and all that, but like Ray Capo, like still believes in all the shit that he said when he started Shelter, you know, day one of Shelter being a band. And that's important to me. I know I've said it on this podcast and in conversations with others, but I just love that like Agnostic Front is like, they've basically been a band for 40 years. you know, and I know there were like hiatuses in there. 7 Seconds is another one too that is meaningful to me because they've been doing it for so long. And what that tells me is there's like bands forming today that could potentially be around 40 years from now, which would make me 82. and like, I don't think I'll ever be done with hardcore. Like there could, you know, hardcore could fizzle out and I would still go back to all those old records that got me through all the turmoil and trauma. But I feel like a sense of relief and pride even really when I see, you know, bands that have been around that long, kids, younger kids than me, you know, kids that are young enough to be my kids being influenced by those bands. It really makes me feel like this is a community for a lifetime.
Well, so to sort of tie that all together, I think the other reason for trying, like when we can, turning the Seisha shows into benefits, A, if we were a bunch of old guys just getting up there and playing and sort of like admonishing ourselves with the praise of other people, while that feels good in the moment or whatever, like it's fleeting and there's nothing, you know, if anything, like it can be kind of conducive to creating like an ego issue. And so like to have some other reason for being there, that's bigger than us was probably a good way to keep your ego in check, but also a good way to introduce to these young folks who are going to be here in 40 years.
Yeah.
That like, hey, we should try and make this a little bit more than us just getting up here and admonishing ourselves with the praise of other people. And if 40 years from now people are doing benefit shows, then like I'm stoked. You know what I mean? Like not just like being in bands, but also just like understanding and like building on what's been done already. You know what I mean? So that's been interesting. To answer your question, when we decide to like go to a specific place in the country, and we're like, okay, we're going to do 3 or 4 shows on the West Coast. And it's like, let's pick out like where we can donate money to or what we can do. And like, look at like where we're going to go and what's important in that particular spot. So like, you know, Chicago was the Chicago Free Freedom School. California was, a nonprofit called Border Angels, which is, they provide food and medicine to people at the border. And it was just kind of like, because we're older and we're punks, it's like, chances are like, there's like somebody within punk and hardcore that's like, oh yeah, like my friend does this or my friend does that or my friend teaches at this school or like, and it was, so it's still very easy to like get your foot into the community and be like, what's going on there and like how can we be most effective there, it's easier than cold calling some like nonprofit and being like, hey, we're in a band and we're gonna raise money, and like, you know, like it just doesn't, a lot of nonprofits to be like, okay, we'll call you back. You
yeah,
know, like,
yeah, yeah.
But if you have like a foot in where it's like, hey, there's somebody who was in 90s hardcore who like is now working at this nonprofit and they understand who we are and they understand the potential of this, then
it can circumvent that, that
things
whole
fall into place.
Situation.
Yeah.
And also it makes you feel better like, hey, this is going to something that actually is going to do something rather than pad administration costs.
Totally. Absolutely.
As someone that gets inundated with a lot of requests for donations for nonprofits, that is honestly something I look into. It's like, oh, are you a national nonprofit or are you a local nonprofit?
Yeah.
And also we have a direct thing and action point to who we do support.
Nice.
You know, sometimes we go outside of that, depends on who you are, but we have a focus that allows us to drive that focus forward and feel like we're actually making an impact rather than like, we're going to throw money everywhere or you're going to have a coffee gift basket at every silent auction and what is that going to do?
Where's it going to go?
Yeah. So, and I think it's amazing too, because you're also reconnecting with older punks that are doing community supported things that are amazing work that they grew up out of.
And they're out there.
And they're, you know, like it's... And I think that's really special to be a part of continually.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just something you retire and volunteer somewhere. It's like you can do it continually. And I love that.
It's one of the, like, I would never be able to donate the kind of money we've donated working at my nonprofit library job. You know what I mean? I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah.
So like the fact that I can get up there and like play like hardcore songs for 45 minutes and then be like, here's a $12,000 check, you know, like to Chicago Freedom School. Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
But, and it's awesome. And it's like beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know,
absolutely.
I mean, when Page 99 got back together and did that at a bunch of shows, and Katie Otto was a part of that, and I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
This is such a beautiful thing because we're still driven by the same things as adults.
When we decided to do that Chicago show, I mean, you've played at the Metro. I've seen you play at the Metro. The Metro is this giant, like, 1,200 person venue, and Adam from Stacia, he's played in like major label bands before, and so he's not intimidated by that world of like reaching out to people and stuff like that, but he's also the ambitious one that's like, we're gonna play the Metro, and I'm just like, hey, if you fucking think so, I don't know, dude. but like, you know, when like Bailey had mentioned, like, yeah, Page 99 had done a lot of work for Planned Parenthood, and maybe we can get them, and like we can like do this thing where it's like we're both playing this show at the Metro, and like we can, and it was like, yeah, as soon as Billy reached out to the guitar player, Mike was like, yeah, I feel like we can totally like make this a potential for like selling that place out and being able to raise a lot of money, and like just kind of like understanding, like, you know, like finding people that are on that same page and being like, okay, cool, like this is possible. And so it's like, whereas I looked at it as like super ambitious, like once the obstacles started to fall away, it was like, oh no, we can actually do this. This is, you know, so yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah. I just think it's so cool. I love it.
Yeah.
Aging punks doing shit. So speaking of just, you know, outside of aging, you know, what are some like records and books and podcasts or comics that you're into recently?
So I've lived in the Troy, Albany area for 10 years. For the first 8 years I was there, I didn't really participate in the punk and hardcore scene because it just wasn't really giving me like what I wanted from it, and so I was still driving down to New Jersey and Brooklyn and Philadelphia to play in bands. Within the past like 3 years or so,
which you still do, though.
Yeah, I still do. I still do that. But within the past 3 years or so, like a lot of like young bands have started up, and there's a huge presence of like queer folks in the scene now and young folks.
I will have to say it's like the most diverse and inclusive that it's ever been.
Absolutely.
And it's awesome to see and be a part of.
And And because of that, like, I think we're getting, like, more young people at shows, and they're starting bands. So, like, back home, there's, like, Hey Lobite is like, punk band, like, faster punk band. Cinnamon is another, like, kind of, like, I don't know, what you, like, power violence-y band.
They sound like Soul Swallower.
Yeah.
All right.
No Division is like this, like, melodic hardcore band. There's just, like, those are bands that, like, now I'm, like, actually going out of the house and going to shows and going to see bands. And it's like, the first 8 years I lived there, I wasn't doing that at all. So that's been really, really, really cool. I feel like I have, like, a reignited sense of purpose locally now, which I didn't have before. Also, like, so Spirit Killer plays with all these bands, and, like, we're kind of involved in, like, setting up shows now, and I go to shows, and I, like, have people I say hi to now. It's, like, it's bizarre, because I, you know, for the longest time, Troy, Albany area was just kind of, like, that's where I lived and worked, and then my hardcore and punk rock life took place
elsewhere,
every place else, you know, so... playing in Seisha, playing in hundreds of AU, and, like, touring to different places with that, and then coming back home and going back to library life, and, you know. So, so that's been really cool seeing those bands. I ran into a friend of mine last night at the show, and we were talking about comic books. And, recently I've been reading a lot of Jeff Lemire stuff, a lot of... I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, but James Tynion the Third, I believe his name is. He does Nice House on the Lake and Something's Killing the Children, and a few other books that are really good. Superhero stuff, just finished the Zeb Wells run on Amazing Spider-Man, which was really good. Books I'm reading right now, Kate has a suggestion. We played with a band called Fed Ash. Spirit Killer played with a band called Fed Ash. Oh, when was that? Like 2 years ago now, right?
Oh, it was Potsdam, so last March.
Last March. Yeah. And Allie from Fed Ash, we got to talking, and they were like, oh, I'm reading this sci-fi series called Hyperion by this guy, Dan Simmons. And so I went home and I checked it out, and I think I'm on the third book right now of that. Allie, if you're listening, thank you. And yeah, podcasts, listen to Common Thread, obviously.
Thank you.
100 words or less has been really cool lately.
I listened to your interview on there, and I listened to, like, stuff that pops up.
Cool.
Randomly on there.
The Hard Lore interview with Carl from Earth Crisis
was great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So good.
It was really good. I recently was working with my therapist on, and I had to take this quiz for this thing called, where they determine this thing called an attachment style. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but this is like, it talks about how you develop relationships based on, like, being a kid and how you and your parents interacted. And of course, my attachment style was, they say there's no bad attachment style, no good attachment style, but mine was called anxious attachment style, which is like, but there's a woman from Australia that does a whole podcast on attachment and attachment styles. And so my therapist was like, hey, and the podcast is called On Attachment. Okay. So I kind of looked into that, and the episodes are labeled basically on the different styles. There's like 5 different styles of attachment based on how you grew up. So I've been listening to the ones about anxious attachment styles.
I don't even need to know what the other 4 are. I've got the anxious attachment. Because when you're saying that, I'm like, I haven't heard of this. I'm going to ask my therapist about this. I'm going to take this test, and it's going to come back. Your attachment style is wrong.
They say there's no right or wrong. I think I had like something like anxious, insecure attachment style or something like that. And it was like, oh yeah, this... like, so I've been listening to those, and like, it's so weird to have a podcast kind of like be like, you're probably doing this and this in this situation, and it's just like, how do you know? Like, were you there?
Well, like, that, for me, that's like the most liberating thing about going into therapy and like finally being honest about like my past and you know, like
how I would cope with things in healthy and in unhealthy ways. It's like, basically it's all been done before and there's like a roadmap for getting out of that. Like,
yes.
Like when I was younger, I would have been totally put off. Like, no, I'm a unique person. This is, you know, a custom bespoke work of art here, everyone. but now I can see like, no, I'm just engaging in a pattern of behavior that people have been doing for 10,000 years. Yeah.
There's a demystification of behaviors that happens sometimes with that, where you're like, oh, I'm doing this because of this.
Yeah.
And I can change. I think there's like a hopefulness sometimes behind yeah. it, being like, oh, like, so if I'm more self-aware and I understand like when I'm about to fall into this, I can maybe prevent myself from going down those roads. And when I met Rory, I was an absolute like mess, you know, like my life was just, you know, and I hadn't done any of this work yet, you know what I mean? And I think one of the things that we could probably discuss is like, you know, I grew up with a speech impediment and I would, back then, I would have never agreed to do this.
Yeah.
And I find that as I've done this work, with the self-awareness and like with, a therapist, like I can do these things now. And like, I do think about all the words coming out of my mouth and I do have to form them in a certain way. But there's like, I don't know, it's like the you could probably tell, like the speech impediment is much less intense than it was when I first met you, which is, we're going on 22 years at yeah. this point. So it's like, but like, yeah, I feel like there's a whole aspect of the nervous system that there's like nervous system resets that need to take place when you have these like anxiety attacks or flashes, and like, and I didn't know about any of that. And yeah, this is like, I feel like it's been informative. Absolutely.
I mean, just knowing yeah. is that information is probably so relieving.
Yeah.
In and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think like just being a better like husband to my partner who has to deal with me every day. You know what I mean? Being a better like friend and bandmate, and being able to like interact and not have people have to like babysit me or deal with my shit or regulate me. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Being able to like be a part of things.
Hello, Rochester. This is Richard B. Colon
and Quanti Donnell.
We are the curators of the Behind the Glass Gallery, where we host monthly receptions on First Friday, showcasing three underrepresented artists from the Rochester area.
And on this podcast network, you can listen to us speak to these monthly artists to get another lens on their medium and how they contribute amazing things to the Rochester arts community.
Catch us at 240 East Main Street every First Friday and
on the Lunch Adore Podcast Network.
It's like,
because I realized like I was using a lot of my most important relationships essentially as like receptacles for my unwanted negative emotions, self-doubt and anxieties about the future, in a way where I'm thinking like, oh, I'm like sharing my innermost thoughts with them, or I'm venting, or we're bonding over this, you know, experience we both had that we didn't like. And in hindsight, I look at it now, I'm like, no, I was trauma dumping on them. I was expecting like a degree of codependency where they were going to like stop taking care of themselves to take care of me at the detriment of not being able to meet their own needs. So I've been kind of on a similar journey too. In fact, I just did this podcast called The Sober Dad Crew, which is really cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he's another guy who like kind of came up through hardcore and punk, and he works in healthcare now. But he's interviewed a lot of folks from the hardcore scene and punk scene, as well as people that are just in healthcare, you know, that maybe nothing to do with hardcore or punk. But I almost like wanted to turn it into like an apology tour for like my wife, honestly, like who's been with me since I was 19, you know, like I recognize now like she's had to put up with so much, and she, you know, we have a good relationship. She loves me, I think. But you know, I totally get where you're coming yeah. from. So we want to throw Sober Dad Crew out there for people who are thinking a podcast to listen to. But also, there's another one too that I wanted to speak to. Something you said made me think of this, which is a hardcore therapist.
which is another cool podcast, which is intersection of hardcore and mental health.
Nice.
Which I feel like was always there. Like people were talking about mental health. You, Rory, are someone who comes to mind. You know,
not that I should have been.
Yeah, but you were talking about in an open, honest, vulnerable yes, way, yeah. like childhood trauma. Yeah. So it was like, it was there, but you know, now that there's an older segment to the demographic that goes to hardcore shows, it yes. feels like, you know, we talk about it even more, more so.
I mean, like if I may talk about this.
Yeah.
When I met Rory, I was in a band called The Assistant at the time, and we ended up playing with Stand Fast, which was Rory's band, and we ended up playing together because a label that had put out your stuff, Alone Records, yeah. was going to put out our stuff, and didn't really know anything about the band at all, and which is because upstate New York is its own little thing, you know, and sometimes it's like... So they sent, we got a copy of the 7-inch, the Standfast 7-inch, and we're scheduled to like come up to Rochester to play with y'all, or Oswego.
Yeah.
To
yep.
play with y'all. And like, we get the 7-inch and I take it out and I'm reading the lyrics and like the whole, song about, sexual assault.
Yeah.
And written in a way that was like so... so similar to what the singer of our band and The Assistant had written. And it was like, wow, this is like another band.
Yeah.
Like, and also too, I think like you guys were like quote unquote hardcore band. And you had like a male identifying singer, like making these statements.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, I can't wait to get up there and play with this band because like, not because we want to bond over trauma or something like that, but just to be in a room where like this is being acknowledged by someone more than us.
Yeah.
And we went and played that show and I remember just being like, I'm going to be friends with this group of people for the rest of my life. And it was like, you know, one of those things where like that wasn't happening often.
No. Yeah.
You know what I mean? If anything, bands like us at that time were being told to like shut the fuck up and play. Yeah. You know, like yeah. a whole lot. And so like when we met y'all, we were like, these are our people. You know what I mean? And like so and I hate to say that like, you know, that's the silver lining of like these events taking place, but at the same time, like if anything was kind of convincing me that like hardcore was going to provide that community, it's like those moments. Like,
yeah.
We're doing that.
Yeah. Sure. That song is like a very meaningful one for me, the Stand Fast song. And I actually think I was at that Oswego show too. Cool. So, yeah, there's not a lot of places where people will, a lot of communities or venues where people can talk about those kind of things and talk yeah. through them and connect with others who've had those experiences. And I have this like suspicion that there's actually like quite a few people involved in punk rock or hardcore, even metal, that had, you know, whatever type of trauma, you know, you can have as a kid, you know, it makes you angry. It makes you feel isolated. And this is a type of art that really appeals to folks like that, but who also have a longing for community and kind of for self reconciliation in a way where, you know, you can go off in two directions. You can go, you can find community, you can work on yourself, you can, you know, experience some unified sense of self after trauma, or you can just go off into the dark and be totally isolated and be an isolated loner and perpetuate traumas onto others. And I feel like hardcore and punk is an avenue for when you're at that fork in the road to kind of steer you back towards the light of community and to having, you know, developing the ability to just like speak matter of factly about what happened, in a way that connects you with others who've had that or similar experiences.
And I honestly felt too, like, I don't know, this was, the internet was still young
at yeah.
this particular point. And I feel like now it's like, there's so much criticism on like how a person expresses themselves. So it's like if you want to talk about like, you know, a certain trauma or something like that, there's going to be like a group of people online ready to be like, well, when they talked about this, they didn't say this or that. Or
right.
Like, there's going to be this like kind of mic, putting you under a mic.
Yeah.
To like, and I remember feeling like, we were amongst a group of people that didn't care about that.
Yeah.
Like weren't, because it's like, yeah, you have 45 seconds to express this thing. It's going to come out sloppy,
messy,
and it's going to come out messy because we're human beings that are just doing what we're doing. And like, they'll lead to bigger talks, you know, but like, there's no need to like jump on each other and be like, hey, you didn't say this when you did this. And so I think you're being
dismissive of this or that. Yeah.
Like, so it's like, you know, things are going to be messy and weird when you have like 45 seconds in the adrenaline rush of playing a show between the songs and stuff. But like, I think I was thankful to be like in that moment of like, we're not going to go on Reddit now and talk about how like this person fucked up because they didn't mention this or that.
Well, and even for me doing this podcast, and I spoke about it on my other podcast and on Sober Dad Crew, like I never would have thought I'd be able to get on to any kind of recorded medium that was going to be viewed by anyone who in the world who cares to view it and listen to it and say stuff like, well, I was abused as a kid and it, you know, affected my personality in ways that alienated me from my loved ones and, you know, fomented an addiction. You know, I never would have thought I'd be able to get out in public and say that. And through like hardcore punk, I think I developed, you know, the sense of confidence to at least acknowledge that like, I have no choice but to be the person I am. None of us have the choice but to be the person we are and to live in the aftermath of whatever came before this. Mm-hmm. And to be able to acknowledge mistakes that I've made, shortcomings, areas in my life that I'm still working on, and be okay with somebody making fun of me or putting me down or, you know, alleging that it never happened or that I'm being insincere or inauthentic. It's extremely liberating because I know I'm in a point where, and I have had people say things to me like, hey, cut that out or something, you know? And I, you know, I try not to trauma dump. I try not to like harp on it. But I do speak to it with regularity because I know one of the things that helped me was hearing folks like Rory, hearing songs like The Assistant had. Another weird connection to all that is like the comedian Tom Arnold would speak about like that kind of thing quite a bit because he was like abused as a kid. And I remember being a teenager and like not giving a fuck about Tom Arnold. For that one thing. Like,
that's
okay, we've had
totally
that.
Totally out of left field.
Yeah. Tori Amos is another one, too. Yes. We're like, like, I never really was into her music, but I'm like, well, this is all I got.
Like, Little Earthquakes, like, for me, is.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
And, you know, I would say, like, when that song. I mean, I was scared to write that song.
Yeah.
And then to record it. But what helped me was bringing it to that band practice, being like, to the guys in Standfast and be like, I wrote this song. Would it be okay if we did this? And, you know, they were like, absolutely. And just having that group of people that were just so behind the thing of like being able to be messy and express yourself and allowing yourself to be vulnerable was so important. And to be supported and held in those moments, you know? And all of those people are still in my life.
Yeah.
You know, every single one of those people, you know, like, so those connections were so valuable in that moment, in that part of my life. Like this connection that Tom and I have has continued. And the folks that even, you know, approached me later were like, that song was important for me. You know, like many people have shown up and communicated that. And I'm like, I'm glad that it was, but I'm sorry. You know, it's like, it is that experience. And, but to be able to be in these rooms, it's important to be able to communicate and express ourselves in those ways so we can grow.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's so important to, help each other grow and have folks there to help us when we're a mess.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's gonna happen, and it'll continue to happen as we even go through these stages of our lives. Yeah. So
there's the learning doesn't stop.
And no,
the processing doesn't stop, you know. So
yeah, I mean, just like Silent Majority. I mean, one of my near and dear, you know, this is our therapy. And I heard that in 1997, and I was like, this is it. Yeah. Like, this absolutely is it. Like, nailed it. Like, that's how I'm able to express myself. It's I am yelling and screaming and flailing and looking like an idiot amongst other idiots that are doing the same thing. Like, you know, like, there's no rhyme or reason why we're doing this. But it's allowing me to get this whatever out of me.
But so it's like, you know, I guess that's why, you know, when I look at hardcore in 2025 and I'm looking for that. I'm looking for people that are like that, you know what I mean? And I don't see it at like some big hardcore festival where like a bunch of dudes are standing 20 feet away from the band and like three people are moshing and the singer is telling everybody to fuck shit up or show them, like, you know, like I don't see it there, you know? And I'm sure some of those people are nice people and I'm sure some of those people are doing work in therapy or going, but I just don't see it there, you know what I mean? And I feel like, for a long time I was like checked out of like that hardcore because I was just like, I'm just not seeing what you're talking about there anymore. And like, so yeah, like to kind of like be, I don't know what the word is, to not reintroduce, but to see a younger group of people sort of get into hardcore and say, oh wait, no, these things are important to us. And it's not all about like fucking shit up and being tough or whatever. And like, it's like, these are like 18 to 22 year old kids who like have it down, and I'm like, yeah, I want to be part of that, you know what I mean? And it's like, so yeah, it's interesting because I feel like things go in waves, you know what I mean? And for a while we were probably on a wave of like, we don't want to talk about our feelings because we talked about them too much in the early OOs.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
So but now maybe we're back into like, hey, we're all kind of fucked up and maybe we should talk about it so that we.
And where I'm at in my life right now is I have kids that are, I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I'm more involved in hardcore now since they've been born than I was, you know, I would have to go back to like my mid-20s when I was like really that engaged in the local community. You know, always been a fan of the music, always come out to various shows, especially when touring acts were coming around, but like, I need this as much now as I did when I was a teenager because raising kids is really fucking tough. And I'm glad that I get to do it alongside people like Rory, alongside people like Derek Dole from Buffalo, you know, my friend Nate, Eric. It's just such a great community to build yourself up in. And, you know, not that I would say, like, going through childhood trauma made it, like, worth it. But it is that silver lining that, you know, I have this community now. This is a tool in my toolbox that not everyone gets to have. Mm-hmm. And I paid dearly for it. Wouldn't want anyone to have to go through what I had to go through or Rory had to go through or what anyone who's had a difficult situation as a kid. But I have it now and I can use that to improve myself and help lift other people up in the process.
Amen.
Common Thread is co-hosted by Greg Benoit and Rory Van Grohl, with creative support from Rob Antonucci. Follow us on Instagram at Common Thread HXC Podcast for news and updates. Contact us at commonthreadhxcpodcast@gmail.com. Common Thread is a part of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Visit lunchador.org for more information on other great podcasts.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.